Talk.
We want to now focus our attention to a story that has been building up over the last few days and weeks or so. Individual universities, colleges, campuses will over the next while be deciding on whether it will make vaccinations mandatory for staff and for students. UCT's Senate meets on Friday, where this matter will be debated. It's a decision that they say will have to be taken by a full council sitting. Today, the university is meeting with faculty, students, having a broad engagement. We've reached out to other institutions. CPUT says since mandatory vaccinations are not mandated by law, this is something that they are not pursuing at present. UWC sent us a statement saying that vaccinations remain completely voluntary, while Stellenbosch says there is no decision yet on mandatory vaccinations. Joining me now is Dr. Linda Meyer. She's the Director of Operations at Universities South Africa. Are these individual university decisions that have to be made over the next few days, Linda?
Yes, indeed. So I don't think it's a question about over the next few days, but rather that university councils will critically engage with this. In your introduction, you correctly stated that there is no legislation that enables anybody to be forced to take a vaccination. So really what the debate is around is exclusionary processes where universities would say if you are not vaccinated, because they have a constitutional right, they have a right in terms of the Higher Education Act and the Occupational Health and Safety Act to say if you are not vaccinated, we have the right to exclude you from our campuses or any of our premises or our residences.
Does exclusion from campuses, residences also mean academic exclusions? Over the last 18 months, we have had online learning. We have had classes via virtual platform. Would that also have to be an individual decision that a university has to make whether to continue with online learning?
Yes, but I think that most universities have very well evolved online learning platforms. But what our problem is, and we must look at the systemic challenges, is it for many of the students when we speak about online learning and we speak about data security, energy security, all of these things, that needs to come into the fray because most of our students we've had to bring them back to campus so that they could access data, they could access internet. Our students live in rural communities. Most of our students live in rural communities where even if you give them data, there's no network connectivity. They don't have electricity security at home. So these now enter the fray of the debate. But universities, we are urging all universities to continue with the delivery of their online programs if this is a decision that they make that they are going to exclude individuals from their campuses within this frame.
There is a report of UCT students, a 1,000 signature petition supported what looks like by the SRC saying that students do not support a mandatory vaccination mandate for that particular campus. How far and wide does this conversation need to go through the faculties, through students' bodies, particularly if we have in this report on IOL suggests 1,000 UCT students saying that they find this particular mandate unconstitutional?
I think that what is important for us, if we look at the Constitution, obviously the debates are around Section 15, the right to bodily integrity, Section 12, Section 15, the religious freedom. But we must remember that no right in terms of the Constitution is absolute. And it would be very difficult to argue in a court of law to say that these exclusionary practices are incoherent because the government themselves have implemented a national vaccine rollout program to ensure that we minimize the transmission and the infection rates. So because Glenda Gray herself has told us, it's not just about getting the vaccine to protect yourself. Once you are vaccinated, you exponentially reduce your transmission ability. And this is the key thing. And I think the debate really and the antagonism has been brought about by this incorrect phrasing of mandatory vaccinations. We need to qualify that and say you need to be a mandatory vaccination for entry into a premises. Because what this sounds like, you know, and I've been on other interviews where people make it sound like we're going to pin people down and jab them in the neck with a vaccine, which obviously we can't do. There's no right, there's no enabling legislation, and that would be a breach of human rights on its most simple form. So the issue is, can universities exclude students? And they have a legal mandate to do that. And I think that we need to understand, if that is the case, what can we do to mitigate? What must we do? Because we have stakeholders, we have students. We can't just make arbitrary decisions. Councils have student SRCs that form part of those councils, and that the debate needs to be broadened. We need to educate people about vaccinations.
Dr. Linda Meyer, she's the Director of Operations at University South Africa. Earlier, just before the show, I did a pre-recorded interview with Stellenbosch University's Dr. Jonathan Jansen. He has a piece in Times Live today, an opinion piece, which says, no vaccination, no registration. I asked him about that. Professor Jansen, of course, this is a decision that every institution, whether it be FET, whether it be a college, whether it be a university, these decisions would have to be made by these universities' own councils, wouldn't they?
It's not necessarily a council decision. I have no idea why UCT. You know, council is a governance body. You know, it deals with policies and oversees the work of the vice chancellor and so on and so forth. It doesn't get involved in operational matters. This seems to me to be a straightforward operational matter. That is, having now made clear several people that there is no legal prohibition on declaring, you know, mandatory vaccinations and so on and so forth. This is something the vice chancellor and the executive team, in the case of UCT, simply says, we think we should do this, and so on. I would certainly consult the institutional forum, which is the body of stakeholders involving SRC, Senate, and what have you. I would definitely get their inputs, but the council doesn't have to be involved. Anyway, I think the big issue, as I wrote in the Times today, the big issue is the politics of this, you know. People are hesitant, leaders, whether it's in the public or private sector, to mandate anything, let alone vaccination, because of the controversy on the margins. But this is why we have something called leadership. You do things because you believe it is right for the people.
You argue no vaccination, no registration. When then does the discussion come of the right to access to a post-school level education?
No, I think those two things can exist in harmony. Every student has the right to access, but you don't have, you know, every university has certain limitations on those rights. For example, you have a criminal record, a university can deny you access. If you refuse to abide by the use of the university's policies, you can be excluded, as you know, from registration. So it's not like the right to education is a blank slate. And universities all over the world, by the way, have made this decision that it is in the best interest of the health of both the staff and other students if every campus citizen gets vaccinated. So it's not a rights issue here. It is an individual rights issue. That is superseded, I think, by the rights of the community, whether it is, as I said, a private sector company or government department, or in this case, a university campus.
What has the last 18 months taught us in terms of the need for a scholastic, academic, practical environment? Just my personal experience with people who are at a tertiary level, getting through the last year via a distanced learning sort of operation, but at the same time, people in academia saying that they've just not grappled. They need scholars, they need students back in the classroom, in the lecture theatres, whether it is the tutorials, whether it is the big lecture halls, whether it is simply having that face-to-face interaction, particularly with someone who has not been actually, in fact, to a university in the last 12 months, because they were granted acceptance, and then comes a global pandemic, not even stepping foot yet on a campus, yet many people. What is then the importance of trying to get as many students back as possible?
Yeah, good question. Let me answer that at two levels. As you know, I'm a teacher by profession. That's my primary identity, right? And I just stopped teaching university. I taught one university class, and I stopped teaching because I'm on a screen. There's 280 students. Their screens are all off for different reasons. I don't even know if they're there. A lot of my teaching depends on cues that I get from, you know, I can see when somebody's puzzled, when somebody is fed up, when somebody wants me to move on, when somebody wants me to slow down. That is what is profound about the act of teaching. Now I'm teaching to a screen where I can't see anybody, you know, and I don't know their reactions. I don't know if they're learning or what. So there's that level. The second level of response has to do with the nature of the discipline. So you can't teach dance in a performance class, as I said in the Times. You can't teach a teacher to become a teacher on a screen. And you can't do certain kinds of scientific, pharmaceutical, and other kinds of experiments, you know, from a distance. So there's all kinds of reasons why we need these young people back in the classroom. And the way to do that is to do that as safely as possible, because this virus is not going to go away, as I'm sure you've heard often from the epidemiologists. And that means we have to find ways of living and learning and teaching in this case. With the students present. This is quite apart from the mental and emotional health issues, as you know, that several students suffer because of isolation from the classroom and from life.
There would be an argument that says that there can't be a national overarching mandate simply because of, in some areas, rural parts of South Africa, the limited access. But that argument then becomes moot at universities and colleges, where many universities now have their own pop-up sites. I'm sure at Stellenbosch, at UWC, at UCT, all have areas, clinics that provide vaccinations. So the argument that, oh, because a child or a person is in rural Eastern Cape Mpumalanga with limited access, therefore we can't mandate vaccines. But if they're coming back to the universities, there are facilities, there are clinics, there are pop-up vaccination centers, and they get vaccinated there.
In fact, as you said, the argument is exactly in the opposite direction, which is that is why they need to get back to campus, because of the accessibility of vaccines. Many campuses now, as you know, have these pop-up sites, and because they can get, you know, medical and healthcare beyond simply a stick in the arm. So, and the students, by the way, let me just be clear, the students who need face-to-face tuition, most are rural students, are disadvantaged students, precisely because they've already lost out so much in our unequal school system. A kid that went to, you know, a highly functional school with all kinds of online facilities will probably do better at a distance because of their class, and the resource status. So no, the argument for the rural student is profoundly one of access to real life classrooms and the resources that come with that.